Blog Talk Radio.
This is Just Believe Radio. I'm Lisa Tarvis, your host. I'm on the RightStream Network. I am happy to have everybody listening today. We have a great show planned. Let me just tell you a little bit about the show first. First, we have Just Believe, which covers things from holistic health to basically everything under the metaphysical umbrella, spirituality, holistic health, paranormal, which is one of the things we're doing today. A lot of different, really interesting subjects. I'm Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, and author of the book Just Believe, and of course, radio host of the show Just Believe. Our show airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and anyone who would who is an expert in one of the fields I mentioned under metaphysics, if they'd like to be a part of the show, be a guest on the show, please feel free to send me an email, and I will definitely get back to you, and we will see when we can hook you up on the show. My email address is lisa@lisatarvis.com. That's lisa@lisatarves.com, and I'm sitting here thinking, wow, it's actually after Labor Day already. The kids are back in school. The buses are all over the place. You know, they're slowing traffic down in the morning, and it's just amazing how fast the summer has come and gone. But it was a great one, and I hope it was for all of you as well. It was definitely, the weather's been crazy here on the East Coast. I don't know wherever you are, what it's been like, but it's been a crazy, crazy, you know, type of summer with weather. But today's hot. I had the dogs out this morning and I was thinking, wow, it's really, really hot out. So we'll see. But I have a daughter turning 19 tomorrow. She's one of my college students, and she is, going to be 19 tomorrow, so happy birthday to Kristen, my daughter. Gosh, I think that's all I have to talk about personally. But I want to tell you, we've got two segments today. If everything goes well and I hit all the right buttons, you never know. I think I'm going to, but you never know. So, but two segments. The first one is about hostile hauntings, which we even have some EVPs we're going to play for you. EVPs are electronic voice phenomena. They're basically you're getting to hear spirits actually speaking. And I'll have our expert in the field, Lori Champion, come on in just a couple minutes and explain that to us. You know, about EVPs and how they're able to speak to us that way. There's so much interesting things to talk about when it comes to hauntings and spirits and you know, all of the wonders of the afterlife. You know, for anyone who wonders what happens when we die, I think this lady, Lori Champion, is going to be able to give us a lot of information on that. So I don't want to waste any time. I want to get right to it. I'm going to read her bio first. Lori Champion was born in New Jersey, but now resides in Florida. She has been a hostile haunts resolutionist and paranormal investigator for 35 years now. Lori and her team, the hostile haunts specialists, have helped to resolve many hauntings over the years. She helps to refer cases and act as a consultant for hostile hauntings all over the country. Lori is the author of Never Forever Dead, a book of hostile hauntings, and her newest book, her latest book, Bringing the Paranormal Field Out of the Dark Ages. that offers to readers interested in spirit study. Lori has learned much in her journey of over three decades, and it is her goal to bring some new theories and ideas forward for consideration. So I'm going to bring her on. Anybody, if anyone, any of the listeners, if you have any questions or if you want anything you want to ask Lori, anything you want to know about paranormal activity or anything that's going on in your life that you have questions about, please feel free to call us. The call-in number is 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. And you will press 1, and then I'll see you in the queue. You can also call that number and just listen to the show. But if you press 1, I'll see you in the queue, and I will get you on as soon as there's an appropriate moment in the show. So I want to welcome Lori Champion to the show. Lori, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm so excited about this segment. I love the fact that we have EVPs, and hopefully I'm not going to screw it up by pushing the wrong buttons, because I have a tendency to do that.
All do that. We all push the wrong button sometime.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm
famous for that.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's actually not hard to operate this show, but for some reason, I still struggle. Anyway, so I want to talk to you. I have so many questions for you because I love what you do. But let's start with something really basic, and that would be, you know, how and why did you get into this field 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago?
Okay, that's very simple. I'm going to make a long story short. When I was 8 years old, my mother and my grandmother bought a house in New Jersey. And they got an amazing deal on this enormous house. We found out why later. The house was haunted. It was haunted by a very vindictive, angry female spirit who focused on me for years. And we went through literal hell, and we had everybody in there. Every priest, every rabbi, everybody you could call back in the day.
Right.
And, you know, nobody could do anything about it. And when I got into my teens, I took my last trip down the stairs when she placed a colander under my foot halfway down the stairs. And the basement stairs, that is. And I got mad. I stopped being afraid. I got angry. And then I started learning everything I could. And then I dealt with it the best I could, and eventually I communicated with her, and I actually made peace with that ghost.
Really?
And I decided after that I was going to learn as much as I could and help other people.
Did you get hurt?
Yes, I did. I went to the emergency room like 3 times.
Oh, my gosh. So she was
very, very angry. And very
brutal. Did she ever explain why she focused on you?
Yeah. But if I tell you that whole story, it'll take up the whole show.
Okay. All right. Well,
she has a lot of issues. She had a very bad life, a bad life and a bad death.
Oh, that's too bad.
And she had issues with women and girls in general.
What's your goal now with the work you do? I mean, you're all over the place. You guys seem to be. I visited your website, which by the way is
we do a lot of different things. We're not ghost hunters. I never go to any haunted venue to chase ghosts. To me, that's just ridiculous. I go out to help people that are haunted. We've done work with lawyers. We've done work with missing people, all kinds of interesting things, but always in the interest of helping people on both sides of the veil.
Right.
And we do deal with hostile hauntings that no one else seems to be able to handle. So.
Yeah. So, and by hostile, you're talking about basically angry spirits?
Yeah, but you know what, Lisa? I would say 80% of these supposed hostile hauntings were anyone would think it was a demon from hell, the way the ghost is acting out. They're not really hostile. They're spirits with an axe to grind or with something very important. I had one case where a little boy was being scared out of the bathroom every time he'd go. He wanted to play in the bathtub. You know, little boys do that.
Right.
And they moved into this house, and he said that this weird lady was scaring him. Pretty soon the mother had to sit in there so he could take a bath. Things just escalated, and, you know, when children are involved, that's my priority.
Right.
So I was out there in a heartbeat. Turns out the ghost turned out to be this little boy's grandmother who died before he was born.
Oh, my.
The reason she was doing this, her exact words on the EVP were, "The bathroom is sick. There are mushrooms in the wall. They are deadly." Well, her husband went and started pushing on the tile, and the tile caved in one spot. And in the wall were these deadly psyllus mushrooms and black mold.
Oh my gosh. Every time
you turn on a shower or a bathtub, you know, you make steam. And the steam, those spores just come out. So this little boy would have been poisoned. And everybody was getting sick, and they didn't know why. But she wanted to save her grandson from this disaster and her daughter, and, you know. So she was acting out in a very extreme way.
That's amazing. I mean, that's really amazing. But, I mean, you know, so I'm assuming that you have to believe that there is an afterlife.
Oh, I know there's an afterlife. I have no doubt whatsoever. I've talked to many, many deceased people that I know. There is no doubt in my mind there is an afterlife. It's not exactly the way we interpret it. You know, everybody has their own ideas, religious and otherwise, of what goes on
right.
in the next life. It's actually very much like this one. A person who commits suicide, they didn't finish whatever they were supposed to do here, so they had to learn those lessons on the other side. And now they have
right.
a whole new set of stuff to do to make up for that. I've talked to many suicide victims, you know. And it's just, it's not as cut and dried or as black and white as we would like to think it is.
Yeah, I think that like you said, everybody has whatever they were brought up with, whether it's, you know, just
we have people, you hear this all the time, I'm sure. There are people out there, mediums do this, or people claim to be mediums. They say, oh, the spirits don't know they're dead. They're lost. They need to go to the light. We need to show them where the light is. That's ridiculous. They're already there. We've never been there. We don't know where it is.
Right.
And I've had spirits
yeah,
tell me, so many spirits have told me that's not true. You know?
So do they tell you that the light part isn't true, that there's no light, or do they tell you that they just automatically go there, that there's no
they automatically go there. They automatically
yeah.
go there. The only time spirits reach out to us for help is with something that can only be resolved here. Some kind of earthly business that can only be resolved here.
So do you think that's
they're not
why...
looking for us to guide them. That would be ridiculous.
Right.
It's like asking a kindergartner to guide a college student. They're already way ahead of us.
So what do you think causes the hauntings then? What causes actual hauntings to happen?
The majority of the hauntings that I found have been caused for a very good reason. I've seen hauntings for karma, for revenge. I went to a case where a man was actually being haunted by his brother who claimed that he murdered him. And I kept that one to myself, because if he did, I didn't want him to know that I knew. I've seen
right.
hauntings. People, you want to get a good laugh, Lisa. Do you know the majority of hauntings that seem so horrific are actually people's grandmothers? Never piss off grandma. Because she's watching. I had one case where the grandmother was literally beating up her two grown grandsons, pushing them into the shower wall, and it was because they were dealing drugs out of the other grandmother's house.
Wow.
I've had grandmothers show up to report a man in the house molesting the children.
Oh, my gosh.
And that turned out to be true, too. I had one grandma who was mad because her granddaughter sold, it was a great-grandmother and her sister.
Mother.
The daughter had sold their jewelry to bail her son out of jail. And they were furious because they wanted their jewelry to stay in the family.
Right.
And they didn't want her to enable her criminal son.
Right.
So there's always a reason, usually for every haunting. And sometimes it's to tell you something really important for your own benefit, like the lady
yeah.
with the mole.
Right.
The mushrooms.
I mean, that's amazing. That's so important. That's so amazing. So basically it proves that when our loved ones die, they are still
around.
they are still paying attention. They are still watching over.
Oh, yes. They're, you know what the biggest draw for a spirit is? A new baby. When there's
really?
A new baby born, everybody from the family comes around to see the new baby. And I had one case that was amazing. It was actually my son's English teacher. And she was being haunted. She knew there was something there. The baby was interacting with something, and she heard it on the baby monitor. So we went out and taped it, and sure enough, it was the great-grandma. And you could hear her saying, "Is it your grandma?" And the little baby was cooing, and it was amazing. And it was great because that woman got a gift that night. She got to talk to her grandmother who had passed away, the baby's great-grandma.
Wow.
And it was an experience none of us will ever forget, you know?
Yeah, I bet.
It's so nice to have that validation.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
It tells people, you know, honey, no matter what your religion is, no matter what your beliefs, how much faith everybody has that nagging doubt in the back of their mind.
Yeah.
Is this the end? Okay, that's why people are afraid of death.
Yeah.
When somebody hears that loved one and that comes across that, because I play my EVPs back as I go along right there at the case. We do conversational sittings with the spirit. When you see the face of the person who hears the voice of their mother or their grandmother or their husband or whoever it is, you can see the lights go off in their eyes. And it gives them that moment of realization. Wow, we don't die. We do go on. There is a God. There is an afterlife.
And that's life-changing. I mean,
exactly. It's life-changing. And that's what I love so much about doing this work.
Yeah, you're doing work like that, being able to give people validation like that, it doesn't all only give you comfort for, you know, that to know that your loved ones have lived on, but it gives you comfort to know that you will as well.
Exactly.
You know,
the fear of death goes out the window.
Right, right.
You know, and
exactly, the fear of death.
And you know what, also, I think not only does the fear of death go out the window, but I think the way they live their life from then on changes. Because they realize that what we do here matters.
Yeah.
You know,
because
what we do here matters.
We're leaving something behind. We're leaving, you know, we're leaving a legacy, good or bad, we're leaving it behind. And it does
matter.
And
we're also affecting other people and creating our own karma.
Right.
You know, and spirits participate in karma all the time. I had one case where someone had defrauded someone that was a mentally handicapped individual. And that person was being haunted by his dead grandparents.
Ugh.
Yeah, because they were so furious.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were like, I told this person, I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. This is not my business. I can't get in the middle of this. You did this. You have to deal with this. You have to make restitution. You have to make it right.
Have you learned anything about reincarnation from your work?
I don't believe in reincarnation. I believe it happens very, very rarely, like a baby that dies at an early age or stillborn. I think in some cases it happens, but not very often. Not very often. Not from what I've learned from the other side. We don't have all these lives. You know, we weren't Cleopatra and this one and that one.
Okay.
If we do it right, we do it once.
Yeah, well, if we do it
even
right.
Even suicide victims. I talked to a 17-year-old suicide who told me, this is really interesting, I think you'll like this. Her exact words were, I fell from grace. I fell from grace.
Wow.
And then she says, but it's okay. I'm making up for it now.
Yeah.
So she's doing something on the other side. She doesn't get to come back, you know.
Interesting. So tell me what you think, you know, we talked a little bit about what a hostile haunting is, which is what you focus on, what your specialty is. So what causes a hostile haunting? I mean,
truly hostile haunting. And most of the cases I go to wind up being not hostile. But the ones that really are, is there's several reasons that they happen. Usually it's a spirit who was a bad person in life and is a bad person in the afterlife. They're clinging to this world. They're clinging to their former space, which they're allowed to do. They're allowed to be in their house or whatever they want, as long as they don't cause trouble with the living person there.
Right.
But some of them don't adhere to that rule. And then there are spirits that are just predatory. They're just predatory spirits that want to live through the other person. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they cause trouble and they cause problems. So, yes, there are evil spirits out there. There are malevolent spirits, but they're not as common as we're told to believe.
So are they? So they're not demons.
I've never in my life come across a demon. I don't really even believe in demons. I believe there are malevolent entities out there, but not the demons of our folklore and our religious dogma. I don't believe in possession.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, not at all.
So what do you think about all the shows on TV that show, you know...
all the shows on TV.
I think that they're good in a way. I think that they've brought attention to the field. I think it's brought attention to the spirit realm. I think it's done a little bit to open people's minds to an afterlife and things like that. But, I mean, obviously TV is made to entertain us. So how
not
much
only
is
that. I agree with you. They did do something to break ground, to introduce people to the study of the paranormal. But now it has become like a cult following, okay? Every day there's a new show popping up. The big problem with the shows is they are made for entertainment. The people on these shows are not people who have real experience or in the know. They promote things, and they teach people the wrong thing. They offer a lot of misinformation. Just because you have an orb in your photo does not mean you have a ghost in your house. The real researchers knew this in 1985,
right?
Okay, when we all did the orb projects. But they're still selling this stuff on TV because they have to have something to scare people. You know, if it's a black shadow, it's evil. Wrong. Yeah. And they're telling people misinformation. Most of these shows are entertainment, and they're done by entertainers. Most of these shows have casting calls, and they cast these shows. These are not paranormal research experts. They're actors and actresses.
Right.
You can find the casting calls online for all of these shows.
Are there any that you feel are really legitimate?
I've turned down 7 TV shows in 2.5 years because I would not be part of the circus.
Really?
I feel so strongly. Plus, honey, also what it's done is it's turned the whole ghost hunting phenomenon into a thrill-seeking hobby. It's become a tourist attraction. This is very disrespectful to the other side, number one.
Right.
It's like thumbing your nose at God. Okay? Dead people were never meant to be exploited. Spirits and souls were never meant to be exploited for our entertainment, our curiosity, or even for our science, for that matter. You know, there's a fine line. This is why so many times ghost hunters get EVPs where they're getting cursed out and told to leave. Oh, it's an evil spirit. No, it's all the spirits. They're fed up.
They want to be left alone. They want to be left alone. So
if
you
spirit
think
wants
when,
you, they're going to come and find you.
And when they cross over, do you think that they can just come and go? That they can.
Oh, they can come and go wherever they want, whenever they want. I've been told this by so many. No spirit is ever trapped.
What makes an actual haunting? What makes a spirit that it's trapped or whatever?
They're not trapped. They choose to stay there. We have free will in this life and in the next life.
Okay.
If a person, let's say I love my home, right? That's where I was happier than anywhere. Was, you know, home is where the heart is, all that. If I want to linger in my home after I die, I have the right to do that, as long as I'm not bothering whoever's there. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like God says, well, now you're dead and you have to go here to this place and do this. Everybody has free will, and they progress at their own pace.
So if they,
and they're allowed to come back here anytime they want and see their loved ones or, you know, watch the baby or whatever. Go to that wedding.
So when they do that, I mean, when do they make themselves?
I'm so sorry.
No.
Hold on 1 minute.
That's
hang on
okay.
1 second. Hey. Of course, the dog is going to get in a fight with the cat when I'm on the phone. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
That's funny. I heard the dog.
Oh,
yeah, that's
then the one dog stepped on the other dog's foot. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Now, what were you saying?
No, that's all right. So what? The spirits that come in and they make themselves known to the living. Like in the circumstance where there was the mold, you know, the mushrooms in
yeah.
the wall, that's a reason. That's a great reason. Do you think sometimes people are just that they do it because some people just more sensitive? Do some people just pick up on these, like, okay, say the ghost isn't necessarily...
There are some people that are more sensitive, yes. I totally believe that.
Okay, so it can be like they might not be trying to get your attention, but you might just sense that they're there anyway.
This is what I tell people all the time. Right. Spirits are everywhere. They're everywhere people have ever lived and died. They're around us all the time, but we just don't know it. Sometimes we run into them. You know, that's why I have at my my website, I have a haunt rating system for hauntings, and one of those ratings is what they call category SP, which means spirit presence. It's not a haunting. It's just a spirit presence. People have this idea that if spirits are around and you see them or you hear them, that they're haunting you. That's not always the case.
They're haunting you, or that they're stuck, or that there's something wrong.
Right.
No, they're not. Right, right.
You know, it's just the way we've been conditioned by mother culture and, you know, everything to believe that they don't belong here.
I want to give everybody your website. It's kind of long, and Lori had recommended that if you want to find her, just go to Google and type in hostile haunts, and she'll come right up.
And I'll be there.
The actual website is www.PinellasPascoParanormal.com. And you can also learn more about her reading either one of her books, Never Forever Dead, which was the first book, or Bringing the Paranormal Field Out of the Dark Ages, which is the newest one. I just want to give everybody that. And anybody, again, if you have any questions, 347-945-7246. And press 1. That's 347-945-7246. Also, I forgot to open the chat room until just a few minutes ago, but the chat room is now open as well. So, how do you think people can learn? What's the best tool that exists right now in order to learn about hauntings and the afterlife and all of that?
Well, for my take on it, the best way to learn about the other side is to talk to the people who live there. And the only way we have to do that right now is that digital tape recorder. We have all this equipment that's coming out every day that's meant to sell to ghost hunters because it's a big hobby and it's a big money-making thing. But most of it is useless. Even if you get a photograph, Lisa, and you're lucky and you get this stellar, full-blown apparition in the photo, all that
right.
tells you is there's an apparition in the photo.
Right.
That's a person. It doesn't tell you who it is, why they're there. To resolve a haunting, you have to know the who and the why. And the only way you're going to do that is through communication. But most of the paranormal researchers now, the new ones, they don't focus on that communication. They focus on all this equipment and all these gadgets, which aren't going to tell you anything.
What about the K2 meter?
To me, that's one of the classic pieces of crap out there. Those things are so sensitive, they go off for everything. A slight vibration...
Yeah.
Human beings
yeah.
passing by will set them off.
Yeah.
Electricity will set them off. Batteries set them off. Anything.
Yeah, I have a K2 meter. I will admit I was one of the people that bought a K2 meter. And it's kind of cool. I mean, it is kind of cool. But, you know, I do notice that I have to set it in certain places where I know there's no electricity. If I put it near
not
a
only
lamp
that,
or,
but,
or anything plugged no, but, in, it's going crazy.
Not only that, but to me it's too random. I want real communication, real information. Okay, the thing went off. It could mean there's a ghost there, but we haven't even proved that spirits set those things off. We haven't proved that they create that field yet. This is
right.
all a theory. It's all theory.
Right. Right.
So, you know, you're right back where you started. With the EVP, you've got a voice telling you information. And I've gotten so much over the years. I've learned that
yeah.
pure oxygen plays some kind of a special role on the other side. There's something that they need pure oxygen to be able to do. I've learned, I had theories on how EVPs were created, and I got my answer, and I got validation of something I've believed forever. You know, a very scientific theory.
Let's explain to people who don't know what EVPs are. What is an EVP?
An EVP is an electronic.
And how do we capture one?
An electronic voice phenomenon. You turn on a tape recorder, a digital tape recorder, or an analog for that matter, and you talk to the spirit respectfully, and if you're lucky, they will talk back to you. And you can capture that on that recorder.
But you don't necessarily hear it with your ears at the
sometimes
time.
Sometimes
right?
You do. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. We've had cases where we've actually heard a voice and it's on the tape. But you want to hear something crazier than that? We've heard a voice that wasn't on the tape. Now
that really
boggles your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't get that.
So I believe they can communicate psychically and telepathically as well.
Right.
But and they can create the EVP. Some spirits nowadays are better at it because I have certain spirits that I talk to on a regular basis who can make astounding EVPs because they're so used to doing it and they know how to do it.
I want to play, you sent me some EVPs that you've captured over the years, and I do want to play some of these on the air. I've been promising my listeners all week that I was going to do this. And I want to do it. They're very, very short, and I'll play them a couple times. And then when you hear it, maybe you could afterwards explain to everybody what that was and where, you know, how you captured it and that sort of thing. So I'm going to go with this first one. And like I said, I'll probably play it a couple of times, so I'm sure everybody can hear it. But here's EVP number one. I'll try it again. I love that.
I love that EVP. I take it just about every show I go on because it's so amusing.
It's such a strong EVP. Odd chick's going to show me, right?
Yeah, odd chick's going to show me. We had a case. I always pick a case every year that we put at the website as the most haunted for that year. And on that year, we had a case in Sea Pines, Florida, which won for most haunted. And there are all kinds of spirits out there, but that particular place where this person lives, there's waterway that used to be a location where pirates used to go and hang out and bring their stuff and what have you. And my daughter and I were walking out of the screen porch, and I started to walk out towards the water. And she had paused for a minute. She was messing with her recorder. I had a recorder on me. And she looked, and she saw something coming up behind me, and she yelled, "Mom, he's right behind you." And I turned around, and she comes charging out of the house. My daughter's very funny. She comes charging out. You know, she's going to protect her mother. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm impressed, whatever. You know, don't do this. I'm going on and on. And then on the recorder, you hear him go, chick's going to show me. The chicks are us.
I'm going to play that a couple more times. So now that you've explained it, the listeners can hear it again.
It actually is
funny when you tell the story behind it.
The moment went from being really creepy to really funny.
Yeah, I bet. Hold on. That is so clear, and it's fast.
He was really good. We had other EVPs. We have other EVPs from him. He was very good at creating the EVPs, and he was playful in a way, you know? I didn't get the feeling that he was evil. He was playing games, and, you know, he was getting a charge out of it. And when he realized we weren't afraid of him, he thought it was even funnier, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it's like, I don't know, it just seemed funny. And the fact that he started with, I don't know. I think it was a really good one. So another one I have is, you can tell us about this one. It's a little bit longer, but it's still pretty short. So let's see what everybody thinks. Hold on. A little harder to hear. Let me turn up the volume on that one just a bit. It's a little hard to hear. I'm going to turn up the volume. All right.
I know what that is.
He's saying, I cut myself straight up.
Yeah, he has a very southern accent, and he says, I cut myself straight up. He's telling us how he killed himself. He had committed suicide, and he was telling us how he did it in his own jargon, I cut myself straight up. Now, when you think a lot of people commit suicide, they cut their wrists, they cut horizontally.
Right.
And the way to really die is to cut vertically, because then
vertically,
the blood
right.
just, well, you know. And I think that's what he meant, either that or, you know, a lot of Southerners have expressions. I did that straight up, you know. And he's saying, I cut myself straight up. That's how he killed himself. He cut himself straight up.
Let me play that again for the listeners. You can definitely hear it. It's just there's a lot of background.
There's a lot of white
noise
in the background.
Yeah, there's a lot of white noise that makes it a little harder.
I cleaned it as best I could. Some of them you can clean better than others.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the first one was so perfect. It was so clear.
Yeah,
and,
but see, the first one was outside where it was pitch quiet. This one was inside with the air conditioner running.
Right.
The central air, they create so much white noise. We usually shut them down at some point in time, but we hadn't shut it down yet.
This next one kind of freaks me out a little bit because I don't understand why, especially the conversation we just had. It's him saying the spirit saying I can't move on. I'm going to play that one. Hold on. That's very fast. That's very fast.
Yeah.
I can't move on.
The reason he couldn't move on, it's not that he literally could not move on. This spirit could not move on because there was something he wanted taken care of in order to be able to do that. And he was just telling us, you know, I can't move on. He wanted this taken care of. He wanted this done.
So did he?
It had something to do with his daughter and something that he wanted her to have that she did not get.
So
someone else had this.
So did he tell you more then? How did you find out?
Oh yeah, that's
wanted?
How we know all this. That's how I know everything I just told you.
Right.
He was so emotionally distraught over it, he couldn't move on until he made his you know what he wanted known. And taken care of. It actually had to do with his estate, believe it or not.
Really?
He felt his daughter was done out of something she should have had, and he had no intention of moving on until she got it.
All right. I'm going to play it again, just so everybody can hear it one more time. It's a little bit of background noise, but I think it's still pretty clear that, you know, what's being said.
Most of the time, EVPs always have some kind of background noise because spirits, I've always believed this, and I got validation on this, the way they create these EVPs is they find an existing sound wave and they ride it. I don't know how much you know about this, but most people in the field will find that an EVP will come in right after somebody talks. Like, let's say I'm talking. As soon as I pause, the EVP will come in between my words. It's because they're riding the sound wave of your voice. Because even after you stop talking, that wave is still riding for a while of your last syllables or whatever. And they ride that wave. They'll pick different sound waves and they'll ride it and they'll hit it with just like a radio signal. They'll bombard that sound wave with their own and create what I call constructive interference. And that's how they make the really loud EVPs.
And I think this next EVP is where you got your...
I got my answer because I asked him, because this guy was really good. He could talk so well on the recorder and so loud. And I said to him, can I ask you a favor? You know, this is what I've believed. Is this true? You know, how do you create the EVP? And he told me.
And this is what he said. Hold on.
Red.
I push the wave. He says, I push the wave. And that let me know that, yes, they do. They push the sound wave. They interrupt it somehow, and they create some kind of constructive interference, the same way we make radio signals.
Right. Right. I want to play that one.
Push the wave.
This is one of my favorites. I love this one.
I do, too.
Yeah, I do. It really is good. And the fact that you were asking specifically about how to do
that. And I got what I wanted.
And you got what you asked for. Yeah, that's great. Oh, here it is again, everyone.
And you know, Lisa.
Go ahead.
Do you know what's really cool about that EVP? There are some spirits that are very much ahead of others. Most EVPs come in at such high speed. It's like taking a 33 record and putting it on 78, that
right.
You actually have to slow it down to understand what's being said. Do you notice the pauses he's taking? Push the wave. He's doing that deliberately so that I could understand it. And some spirits will actually do that. They'll pause with their words because somehow they know that somehow in that time continuum that EVP speeds up and it's hard to understand. Now, I already know that, so I can slow them down, but most people
right.
don't. And he didn't know if I did or not, I guess. So he was taking his time, one word at a time, to really, really force that message and make it clear.
Yeah,
he put
I think
so much
that
energy into each word.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it makes you then wonder, how did he know to do that? I mean, is he just really experienced with this? Was this something maybe he was into?
Or maybe he's a very old soul and he's been observing a lot.
Has he been watching a lot? Was it something he was into when he was alive, maybe, you know?
Maybe.
Found, you know, I mean, you just don't know, but it's so amazing that he slowed that down for you.
I couldn't believe it. We're all just sitting there with our mouth open.
I bet. Did you hear that one naturally, or did you only hear that one?
No, we did not hear it. We only heard it on the tape recorder.
Okay.
But there were seven
right.
people
That's
who
interesting.
Heard it played back right after I asked the question. We played it back. Because this particular guy, he was being really nice, and he was answering questions for us. And I thought, you know what? This is the right person. He's going to be nice, and he's going to answer me. I just knew it, and he did.
Well, he certainly did. All right, this is the last one I have. This one's saying that would be Tyler. So let's
listen
to that.
Yeah, he's telling us his name.
Okay. Oh, so he's you asked him what his name is?
We asked him, what is your name? And he said, that would be Tyler.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, here it is. It's very fast. Again, it's only
Do you
like
notice the southern
second.
Drawl?
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell.
Do you know who that is? We went
no.
to a case where there was a haunting. And the ghost was not, the one who was doing the haunting was not being that cooperative. There was a Civil War soldier there who just happened by, I guess, and I don't know what he was doing there. I have a photograph of him as well. And he was giving us information all night. And then after the photo, I went back inside because we took the photo outside, and I asked him his name, and he said, that would be Tyler, with his little southern drawl, his little rebel accent.
Let's listen to it again.
If anybody wants to see Tyler, there's a picture of him at my website on the latest case updates.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I actually
complete.
Did,
he's got his uniform on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I actually visited the website, and it's there's so much information on the website. First of all, I want to say this seriously.
About 50 articles
just,
there.
Not just plugging the website because of the fact that you're on the show, but plugging the website because there is so much information. Anything you possibly want to know about the spirit realm, the afterlife, hauntings. There are so many categories, so many things that you guys cover. I was so impressed with the website. I really was because, and
Thank
I don't
you
say
so
that
much.
Easily. Yeah, most
Thank
of the time,
you so much.
Websites usually just like they confuse me and boggle my mind.
Yeah.
But I mean, you
well,
talk
most
about
of them are out, most of the websites are there to entertain.
Right.
You know, well, I wanted to create a very comprehensive educational website.
Yeah, and this and that's what exactly what this is, and that's what I think I like so much about it, was it talks about orbs and streamers. It talks about EVPs. It talks about hostile haunts. It talks about how to do cleansings, paranormal traumas, protection, mediums and psychics. Everything imaginable is on there, including your Florida Bigfoot thing, which I also want to ask you about, because I did not know there was a Florida Bigfoot.
No, there is a Florida Bigfoot, and the skunk ape and the Bigfoot are two different things. But before we go into that, I just want to say one thing, just because I think you'll really love this. When you're talking about paranormal trauma, you know the medical field does not accept paranormal events. Well, we have a psychologist here in the state of Florida who contacted me about 4 years ago because she was doing a paper trying to get the medical board to recognize paranormal trauma as a real trauma. She experienced it, she believes in it, and she wants to help other people. And she picked me to work with because she loved my website. She said, you've got so many years in here, you've got so much to share. And I worked with her. I went out to see a couple of her patients to validate that they were being paranormally traumatized. And this woman is one of the few psychiatrists in the entire country that is pushing to get this accepted, and she treats people. So if I have a case with a kid that's been traumatized, I have a resource. I can say, okay, you go see Dr. Holly West, and she'll believe you, and she'll help you. And that, to me, is worth its weight in gold.
It really is, because most of the time, if you go into a
psychiatrist... It's one tiny step, you know?
Yeah, if you go to a psychiatrist and you say, you know, I'm hearing a voice, and they're going to
be
like,
you medication.
Okay, here's some medication, and let's get that stopped.
But this woman is way ahead of her time. She really is, and she is the nicest person. She has children of her own, and I was just so glad that she called me that day. I was ecstatic.
Yeah, that's.
And now I have
awesome.
A resource, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we need that because, you know, this stuff is getting so, you know, popular. And again, I mean, you know, as much as we know that a lot of the TV shows and stuff are made for entertainment and, you know, it's not all.
Yeah, but
the TV shows are getting
people in trouble, Lisa, because everybody sees this on TV and then they want to go out and do it. And they don't tell you on TV the reality of what can happen. So everybody and their brother is out there stalking the graveyard and going into old abandoned places trying to find ghosts. And sometimes they find more than they ever wanted.
Well,
and then
another
haunting is born.
That's a really good point. I mean, did anybody, have you or anybody in your group, any of your teammates, have any of them ever been attacked or harmed?
I have pictures at my website of a man, one of my teammates, who was attacked by a ghost. And when you get attacked by a spirit, it leaves a very specific type of injury. This is why I know when people are really getting attacked by a ghost. It'll leave an injury that is raised, red, and appears like a second-degree burn, complete with blisters.
Wow.
There's no mistaking a paranormal attack. No mistaking the wound. But the whole thing is, if you go and harass anyone, they're going to strike back at you. You can't go to your neighbor's house and force your way in and call them out without getting a confrontation, right?
Right.
But people think they can do that with the spirit world, and it's okay because they see it on TV. Oh, and it can't hurt you, you know, because the guys on TV don't get hurt. They're not really doing it.
So many of these groups popping up in every town we live in now. I mean, every town around the world.
Oh, there's a new
one
on every corner.
Yeah,
and when they
everybody's ghost hunting.
These
know?
People, they go into haunted locations, and they really don't know what to do in the first place. They all want to help, but they don't have a clue how to do that. And most of the time, they just make it worse.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll go into a place that isn't even haunted and call spirits to that place. And now the person is haunted, and the team is off on their merry way.
For me, you know, what an attraction for me is, you know, I would go to dinner at a place that claims to be haunted before I'd go to dinner at a place that's not. I mean, to me, that's
yeah,
like,
but that's different.
You know,
that's different.
Just for fun, you know, just to see.
Yeah, but honey,
I,
that's different.
Yeah.
You're not going there and provoking them and calling them out. You're just going to eat dinner and to see what happens. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
you know,
what that I find interesting.
You're not going,
I'm,
for instance, you're not going into a, let's say, a tuberculosis hospital where people spent the worst times of their lives, and going in there and asking them to relive it all for you, and going in and say, hey, you know, come out and talk to me. Then they go to the mental hospital. Look, we have the electroshock therapy machine here. How does that make you feel? You know, what is that?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
That's mean. You know, it's kind of mean.
That's abuse. That's cruelty.
Yeah. I live about 2 minutes away from, I don't know if you've ever heard of Pennhurst, but it was Pennhurst is a closed down now, but it's a psychiatric hospital, and it's supposed to be very, very haunted. And I'm a little...
And it probably is.
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, you know, a lot of the famous ghost hunting teams have been in there and taken a look at it.
Also, with hospitals, jails, things of that nature, buildings that have a negative history, you know, unpleasantry. Most of the activity there is residual, because anytime anybody goes through anything tremendously emotional, it produces a residual imprint. I'll tell you something that you'll find very interesting. Where I live, there's a cemetery. And a few years back, there was, you know, it's like a lover's lane. The kids go out there. There was a couple out there. They were very drugged up. They got into an argument. And the girl ran over her boyfriend with a car 3 times. And then she left him to die. He was screaming for help for over an hour before somebody heard him. He's alive, by the way. The ambulance, somebody did hear him. They found him. He's made mostly of titanium now, but if you go to that cemetery on any given evening and you turn on a tape recorder, you can record his screams for help. Now, this man is alive.
Yeah.
But picture the state of mind, the emotion that he was in when he lay there dying with his body broken beyond recognition, screaming desperately for help. He created an imprint that will last forever.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
so not everything
it's,
people are picking up in these places is interactive. A lot of it is residual. You know,
we're down to just the last few minutes. Hard to believe, but it went by that fast. I want to ask you a couple of things. You know, you're still taking cases. What kind of cases do you take? Can people call you and do you take
my
cases
phone number
that
is-
way?
Plastered all over the website.
Okay. All right. So you are still taking cases. And,
oh, yes.
You have
I
no
did one last night.
Oh, really? Okay, good. So
yeah.
You have no intention of going to retiring anytime soon?
Not anytime soon, no.
Okay.
Not until my son is old enough to take over.
Ah, there you go.
And even then, it's not going to be for a while.
Well, tell everybody, we want to talk about, you know, how everybody can get a hold of you, your website, and where people can find both of your books, the first one being Never Forever Dead, and the second one being Bringing the Paranormal Field Out of the Dark Ages. Take a couple of minutes and tell everybody how they can get
the
a hold of you.
The easiest way to accomplish all of that, go on any computer, put in Hostile Haunt Specialists or just Hostile Haunts. At the top of the page, you'll see a link that says Home, Pinellas Pasco. All the information on everything is at that website. My phone number's there. My emails are there. There's a contact link there where you can write to me. The books are on the front page, and there's an article called Don't Miss This for the second book, which tells you everything about it, what's in it. All the books are at Amazon. They're at the second one is also at Smashwords. You can get the second one electronically and in paperback. The first one is still available only in paperback because we're having a glitch with Kindle. And Kindle says it's the publisher's fault, and the publisher says it's Kindle's fault.
Of course.
And we're sitting in a stalemate.
That's great.
But we can't get the book. We can't get the manuscript to load into the Kindle. But everybody's blaming everybody else.
So is it
but
down
the new one
at
you
all?
You can get for any electronic device. It's at Smashwords, it's at Kindle, it's at Amazon, it's at quite a few others that I don't even remember the names of.
All right. So I really appreciate your being on the show. We'll definitely have to have you back on again, maybe bring some new EVPs on. Also, there are a bunch more EVPs.
Or we can come back and talk about Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get to talk about Bigfoot. I do want to talk about Bigfoot. Everybody, go to Lori's site. You'll find so much information about Bigfoot, but we will definitely talk about that on the next time you're on the show. And about, there's so many other EVPs on there that we didn't play. We just played, a few.
There are endless EVP links there.
Right.
And
there
articles
are so many
about how to work with EVPs and things like that.
Absolutely. And Lori, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're not discouraging people from trying to collect EVPs.
To discourage people from ghost hunting.
Right.
Because it serves no purpose and comes to no good end. You have to, if you want to get the communication from spirit, you have to change your agenda. Because they know your agenda when you walk in the door. They know if you're there to exploit them. They know if you just want something cool for your website. Or you're just following some kind of fan cult following.
Right.
You know, the reason that you're doing it is more important than what you're doing.
Right.
You have to have the right reasons, or you're not going to get the respect or the cooperation from the spirits.
Right. And I think that's really, really important, you know, to get out there is you know, that you're not discouraging people from talking to, you know, ghosts that happen to or spirits that happen to be
in your
home or in your area or around
right.
you. It's you know, and you can do that very easily with a digital tape recorder. You don't have to go. And I always think the cemetery thing is ridiculous, personally.
That is nothing good hangs out at the cemetery with this rotting corpse.
Why would you?
Nothing.
Why would you want to hang out by your grave?
So no great revelations are going to be revealed there.
Yeah, I always think that's silly, and I think that that does nothing but attract trouble, and I always discourage people from that. So.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your being on the show. Again, everyone, visit Lori's website www.PinellasPascoParanormal.com or simply Google Hostile Haunts, and she's going to pop right up there. And you can visit her website that way. And definitely check out your books. I'm really excited about the work you're doing. And
thank you.
I can't believe it took me this long to find out about you. And I really
enjoyed doing the show with you, Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I had a good time as well. It's really fascinating information, and I really hope everybody takes some time to. The website is so full of information. I mean, seriously, you could spend hours on your website. There's so much there.
This is true.
There's so much there. So much to learn. So much to learn. Even for those of us that think we know it all, there's still a lot to learn. I learned stuff when I went on.
Hey, we're all learning. We're all still learning.
Yeah,
I always
tell
everybody there are no experts in this field.
No, I know. You can't really be an expert, and I don't think you can be an expert.
No, the experts are on the other side.
forever growing and changing, you know?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm going to take a short commercial break for all my listeners, and we'll be back with our second guest in just a few minutes. Hold on, everyone.
Imagine a world where bullying isn't considered a normal part of childhood.
A world where I'm not afraid to go to school.
To speak out.
To be myself.
A world where I'm not afraid to be caught alone.
Come on, punk. We have the power to stop the bullying.
Speak out.
Speak up.
Educate.
Find out what to look for and how you can make a difference at bullying.org.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up.
I shouldn't be afraid to get out of school.
To turn on my computer.
Message. I walked to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis.
I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Everyone, and we are back. You are listening to Just Believe Radio on the RightStream Network. I am Lisa Tarvis, your host, and we just had a really wonderful segment with Lori Champion from Pinellas Pasco Paranormal.com. We've talked a lot about EVPs and things like that. So if you missed the first half, definitely go into the archives and listen. It was really, really interesting for those of you interested in paranormal activity and things like that, and she has some interesting ideas and beliefs. So that she actually has after having 35 years of experience doing this, or 30 some years of experience. I don't remember if it was 35 or not. But that's what I'm going with. Anyway, my next guest is Mercedes Karkle. And Mercedes Karkle is an award-winning author and channel for Mary Magdalene. In July of 2010, Mary Magdalene began coming to Mercedes daily, giving extraordinary messages for humanity's evolution and spiritual growth. That was the birth of the book, Mary Magdalene Beckons, Join the River of Love, which contains the full series of Mary's heart-opening and mind-expanding messages, along with Mercedes' illuminating commentary. Mercedes also offers workshops and private sessions in person and long distance. Her work includes Evolve Life Coaching, Guidance from Beings of Light, Akashic Records, Record Readings, and Light-Filled Intimacy Instruction. So I want to definitely bring her on the air and get some more information about this. So Mercedes, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you being here. I'm really excited
Thanks.
About this, and I had seen your information, when I first started the show, and I don't know why it took me so long to get you on. I really don't, but it did. But usually it's because I'm like months ahead booked at this point, but this is a fascinating thing to me. First, talk about Mary Magdalene in general. I know who Mary Magdalene was. Most people, especially Christians, are going to know that. But why don't you give everybody a little bit of information about who she is, was, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start, because in my experience, there's a real range of people who are very familiar with Mary Magdalene to people who really don't know much about her or don't even
recognize the name.
So I think that's a great place to start.
Okay.
Well, Mary Magdalene is known from the Bible. She is listed in the Bible as one of the followers of Jesus, and specifically best known, I think, for people who are connected to the Bible, as the first person to see him after he resurrected. That's the story in the Bible. For many years, centuries, he was given the title of being the repentant prostitute that Jesus had brought into his fold. And in recent times, that's really come into question to the point that the Catholic Church has reneged on their position. In 1969, they said there was no evidence that she ever was a prostitute, and in fact, they made her a saint. and now she has a feast day celebrated every July to her as a saint in the Catholic Church. But many people still equate her with the prostitute. And so that's sort of the lore, the history in some sense. But in recent times, many, many people are starting to feel Mary Magdalene, have a relationship with her, and are also starting to consider that there is a whole different story to Mary that wasn't told in the Bible. Many people believe that she held a very special position and was probably Jesus's wife or sacred partner, that they had a child together, and that she was the one that he gave his primary teaching to and the number one teacher after he went through the crucifixion, who survived and went on to teach. Many people believe that Mary Magdalene left Israel, Jerusalem back then, and traveled to the south of France, and that's where she lived the rest of her life, and may or may not have been teaching, and there's many different theories about exactly what happened to her. But in short form, that's sort of the what different people know and think about Mary Magdalene. Now, in coming to me, Mary Magdalene, which she started coming to me in 2010, she did not focus very much on who she was in her past life. She was much more interested in us and what's happening to us right now and what she can do to help us in our spiritual growth and emergence into the new age. But she did say a little bit about herself, and I had the feeling the reason she didn't talk about herself too much is because she didn't want to distract us from what we needed to do for our own personal growth. And that she knows how fascinated people are with, you know, finding out who she really was, who Jesus really was, what his life was about, what all of the people at that time period, that there was great interest in that. But that was not her interest in speaking with me. Her interest was in helping with us. Nevertheless, she did say a few things. And what she said was that she was a priestess of Isis, who was trained in the temple of Isis in the very high esoteric practice of the sex magic of Isis, and that this was in preparation for her relationship with Jesus, who she always called Yeshua. That is the Aramaic word that Aramaic was the language that was spoken then. So that was her name for Jesus. And that she was prepared for being in a sacred relationship with him, which she said they were, and that part of this sacred relationship that they were practicing sacred sexuality together, that he was also trained in his preparation, and that this was part of their blessing work for the world and their transformational work for themselves, which allowed them to do their full blessing for the world.
Wow. Tell everybody a little bit about your background. Did you have psychic abilities or medium abilities before this happened?
Well, actually, I think I did, but I didn't really realize it. I think it's taken me my whole life to kind of realize what I was able to do. And my earliest experiences in this kind of realm started when I was 8 years old. And that was, but to put it in context, my family was not a religious family. They were Jewish, but they were not very interested in practicing. So I was raised pretty much outside of any religious context. But I did know the basics about Judaism and also about Christianity from being raised in, United States. So when we were 8 years old, my family went to the New York World Fair. And one of the exhibits was from Italy, and they had the Pietà from Michelangelo on loan to the New York World's Fair so people could view this incredible statue, which is Mother Mary holding Jesus after the crucifixion.
Right.
And I went into this with my family not understanding at all what this statue was about, why we were even viewing it, which was because my mother is a great lover of art. And I went inside and had a very transcendent experience where I crossed over into another realm and was very exalted and in the is the blind condition. And that was my first experience. I didn't know why it happened. I never talked with my family about it because that's the way my family worked. We never talked about things like that.
Right.
So that was followed by a second experience that I started having when I was 12 years old. And in that experience, I was by myself in my home, and periodically I would have a vision come to me of having walked with Jesus in the desert. And I would see myself as part of the group that was following him. There were about 100 people. There was an inner circle, and I was not part of the inner circle, but I was part of the larger gathering. And it was a very wonderful thing. I can still remember now. I can still see the vision now. And that, too, I never told anyone about it because I didn't know anyone who I thought would understand. And I think a lot of children do that, but that's not uncommon at all. So I went on to have many, many spiritual experiences, not that you would necessarily call channeling, but I was very drawn to spirituality, especially Eastern spirituality. I was with a guru for 17 years, and then I found a new teacher who I was with for 2 years, and early in that time went through a profound spiritual awakening, which for me was the fulfillment of my spiritual seeking, of really knowing myself as not separate from God and everything else. And then I went on from there, not really clear what was going to happen with my life, because my whole adult life had been about this spiritual path that I was on. And now it seemed like I had ended that, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And I started getting visions again. And these, I had two visions. I had a vision of a volcano, that I was on the side of a volcano and doing ceremony. And then I had a second vision where I was at the side of a lake leading a group of women in sacred ceremony. And a few months after I started getting those visions, I met a man, fell in love. He lived in Hawaii. I went to Hawaii to visit him, and there were the volcano and the lake exactly as I had seen in my visions.
Oh, my.
So, yeah. And even then, I still didn't consider myself psychic. I was kind of a hardcore case.
It's a lot for me.
Yeah. So what happened in Hawaii? Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said it probably wasn't easy to accept in the beginning.
No, and I didn't have an orientation. I wasn't looking to be psychic. I didn't know anyone else who was psychic. I was on a different path, I thought.
Yeah.
So what happened when I went to Hawaii was I was in relationship with this man who was a permaculturist, and I started learning all about being close to the earth and in relationship with Mother Earth and the spirit of the earth, which was a whole new thing because my meditation practice prior to this had been very more ascended, more going into the transcendental realm.
Right.
Exactly. And now I was really connecting with the earth, and we got property, and the spirits of the land started talking to me and communicating with me and telling us how we should develop the property, where we should put things, and we very quickly found out that these messages were 100% accurate and started listening to them. So that was the next phase for me of my opening. And from there, I started to periodically, and I mean once or twice a year, I would get a message from Spirit, and it would be a very short message, just telling me, do this, do that. And again, I started experimenting and finding out that I was being guided very well and that these messages were really helping me. So what happened at the end of 2009, I was still living on the Big Island, I got a message from Spirit telling me it was time to leave the Big Island. And I was not at all prepared for this. I had lived there 10 years, so I wasn't going to live there for the rest of my life.
Right.
So I checked this message out 3 times, just wanting to make sure I was getting the right message. And sure enough, it stayed very consistent, so I decided to follow it. And I closed up my life in Hawaii, but the message hadn't told me where I was supposed to go. It just said, leave the Big Island. And I didn't know where to go. So I came to visit my family who lived in the United States mainland. And I found out that my parents were needing some help going through issues of aging and needing some help in various areas of their life. So I was so glad that I was there and able to help. I spent the next 4 months doing that. And periodically during this time, I would ask Spirit, okay, Spirit, where's my new home now? Where am I supposed to live? And I received absolutely nothing, no response whatsoever. So I just kept forward doing what I was doing because it was clear I had something to do for now. And at the end of that time, when I had done everything I could see that I was able to do to help my parents, the messages started again. And I got guided to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where immediately it was totally clear life was streaming down from the sky, the red carpet rolled out, I was given everything I needed for help. And after being here for a few days, I was meditating one morning, and all of a sudden I felt this very strong presence around me, a very wonderful, benign presence. And it felt like it was especially centered in my throat. I had the sense that it was blocking it. I was somehow holding it back, keeping it from coming through, and I really wanted it to come through. So I put all my intention on whatever I could do to open my throat, to release any blockage in me, and all of a sudden a voice started speaking through me, very different from my voice. And at the same moment, I had the internal telepathic communication to my brain that this was the voice of Mary Magdalene. And she proceeded to give an entire spiritual discourse, very different from anything I had received before, where I had just received very, very brief messages pointing me to do this or that. This was a profound fact. It was not just for me. This was for all of humanity. And I was blown away. It was just awesome and so new and different, and by the end, I felt like I was just melted in a puddle of bliss. Yeah. And then I had a thought, and the thought was, I'm not going to remember this. And that was completely unacceptable, especially because I felt like this was not for me. This was supposed to be for everyone. So without hesitating a moment, I said, will you repeat this message so that I can type it into my computer, because I'm a very sensitive person. And she said, yes, and I went and got my computer, and she gave me the entire message again, identical to the first time. And what that did for me was, first of all, I could record the message, which I wanted to do. But secondly, and probably more importantly for me, it validated that this was Mary Magdalene talking to me. I couldn't have done that. I could not have recreated that message verbatim exactly the same as the first time. Right. So that was really huge for me.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's just what an amazing story. And you know what, the first thing that I want to ask is, I mean, you said you were brought up Jewish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though not hardcore Jewish, I mean, obviously you weren't heavily into the practice, but why do you think Mary Magdalene chose you to communicate with?
Well, I wondered this. Absolutely, from the first moment she said Mary Magdalene. My first thought was, why would Mary Magdalene ever pick me? And it was a thought I had for a long time, because I had a lot of doubts about the whole process and of myself. And
of course,
it was one of the things Mary addressed very directly with me, my doubt. And she worked with me a lot to go beyond my doubt. And what I came to see over time was, it seemed that there were a lot of reasons. First of all, I came to see that my life had prepared me perfectly for this. Even not being Christian in a society that's primarily and predominantly Christian, and also not being, you know, being very nominally raised Jewish.
Right.
And so what that did was, it allowed me to have familiarity with the history of Judaism and Christianity without being locked into any particular ideology. And then I got involved in Eastern spirituality. I'm very familiar with Eastern spirituality, with Indian teachings, with Buddhist teachings, to the point that I went through what many people consider a classical awakening in the Eastern tradition. But again, I wasn't really identifying solely with any of those paths, but I was well schooled and informed about them. And so what this did, I think, was allowed me to be an open vehicle for her where I didn't have preconceived ideas. I wasn't locked in. I didn't even know very much about who Mary Magdalene was before she started coming to me. But yet I had a lot of understanding of spiritual principles, different spiritual paths, and a lot of my own personal spiritual experiences. So I think that was part of it, was that I was prepared in that way. I also came to believe Mary Magdalene has been with me for lifetimes, or maybe better put, I've been with her for lifetimes. And I started to remember these things at various points in my life, of remembering having been a priestess even so early in my life, remembering having walked with Yeshua in the desert. And I believe that because the memories that I've had of these practices coming back to me, I was also part of the temple when she was there, and I was trained in those practices as well of sacred sexuality, because I remembered them in my body, and I felt like that was a reawakening. So I feel like it goes way beyond this time. I've been working with her a long time and been prepared for what I was doing this particular lifetime in terms of supporting her in her connection with so many people.
One of the things that I'm always interested in asking people that have experiences like this, because I have as well, not with Mary Magdalene, but with angels and being able to communicate and even see them, physically see them when I was a child. So I get it, but How did your friends and family, because I just think this is, I always think this is just an interesting question. How did the people in your life, how did the people around you that love you and things handle this new thing? It's hard not to talk about. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to squash when you have something this intense happening to you.
Right. I felt like a miracle was happening, like the miracle at Lourdes or Our Lady of Guadalupe, or along those same levels. That's what I felt like was happening to me, and I just couldn't think of or talk, didn't want to talk about anything else. This was all that was going on.
Right.
At the same time, I was very afraid to share with people, because I was afraid that they were either going to tell me that I was totally crazy and deluded, or that why would Mary Magdalene ever pick me? Even if this was happening, she wouldn't choose you to talk through, was what I was anticipating. So I was really cautious initially about sharing this with people. But I started to test the waters little by little. First, I shared it with friends who I thought would understand, and their responses were wonderful. And what I saw was that even though they weren't having the experience I was having with Mary Magdalene coming and speaking through them, by my sharing what was happening and sharing her actual words with them, they could feel her, and that it was transformative for them too. And that was exactly what I suspected, but it was wonderful to actually see it happen.
So in what
and
way
then
did
I started
it
little by little, I started telling strangers, you know, if it would come up in the moment, you know, somebody would say, well, what do you do? Those kinds of questions. And I started dipping my toe in the water of telling them. Still very afraid. And what I found was, first of all, I would say the word Mary Magdalene, and it was like I would watch the doors to people's hearts fly open. It was amazing. And then, right after that, people would start telling me about their relationship with Mary Magdalene. And I didn't know this was going on, that she has a connection with so many people. And I started hearing about their stories, and they didn't care about me. They didn't have any attention on whether I was crazy or not. They wanted to tell me about their experiences with Mary Magdalene. So that was great. And then there was one other... Oh, go ahead.
And I'm just, you can absolutely go ahead. I was just going to, you can maybe lead into this next question I had, which is how, because we're already kind of touching on it, how did this, all of this, this new ability, this new, I mean, like you're saying, this huge opening of your heart to Mary Magdalene, how did it transform your life? How did it change you? And
well,
how did it been found?
It definitely changed me, but it was sort of a change in the direction I was already going, but it amplified it hugely. And that is that as soon as I started getting these messages, it became crystal clear that this is what my life was about now, that my life was now in service to Mary Magdalene and to supporting these phenomenal communications getting out to the world. And so that was a big leap of faith for me. When I left Hawaii, I sold my property, and I started living on the money from the sale of my property and trusting that whatever I needed would be given to me and I would be supported. And that was kind of, that was scary to do that. But on another level, there was no choice for me whatsoever. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So that's what I did. I started to... What happened was Mary continued coming to me for a month. And over that course of that month, she gave me 25 messages. And it became crystal clear she was downloading a book. And every message came out in perfect form. And the progression from day to day was absolutely perfect, too, in terms of she was totally giving a book that was already completed. All I had to do was type it out. Except, at a certain point, she told me she wanted me to write my commentary to each of her messages to help people to understand what she was saying and also to add in my personal story so that people could see what does this look like in someone's life here, you know, on Earth, in our everyday world. So I started writing the book, and while it only took a month to receive her messages, it took me a year to do my part. And then it took 9 more months after that to get out, to publish the book. I self-published. So the book came out in June of 2012, a little bit more than a year ago. And then I started promoting the book. And now I'm working on a second book from Mary. She's giving me another book that I'm in the process of writing up. So that's the biggest change, is that my life has become totally about serving her message in the world. And also receiving her communication up to channeling in a way that I had never been open before. And all of a sudden, I was able to connect with other higher beings. I started having group gatherings where I would channel a higher being and they would come in with their own amazing messages, and then people would ask questions and get their questions answered. And then I started doing private sessions where I started channeling for a particular individual so they could ask their own personal questions. And I started doing Akashic Record readings. That was another thing I was told, that I could read Akashic Records, which is the record of someone's incarnation of their soul through all time, through all their lifetimes. So definitely all of these things were very big for me.
And what feels like tremendous blessings, I feel like I have just been so, so blessed to be this messenger for these amazing beings.
Yeah, it does feel like a huge gift. I mean, just to have the ability to communicate with a deceased loved one, let alone an ascended master. You know, I mean, that's amazing. So let's talk about Mary Magdalene Beckins, Join the River of Love, which is your book that's out right now. There are a lot of books out there on Mary Magdalene, obviously, because like you said, she has become way more popular in the last several years. Obviously she's always been there, but people do seem to. They have seemed to start having more of a connection with her. I've noticed in the last
in the last few years, and there's been a lot of books and cards and, you know, all kinds of things that have come out regarding her. How is your book different, do you think, from the other stuff that's out there?
Well, most of the books that are out there, and again, I wasn't familiar with hardly any of this material about her or the books that were out there. I thought this was going to be virtually the only book about Mary Magdalene when I was writing it. And I think, again, that was part of, like, keeping me this blank slate where I wasn't influenced by the other, you know, the wealth of material that's actually out there. But most of the other books, what I found is they either are historically focused, where they're trying to find out actual historical evidence for who Mary Magdalene was, where did she come from, what was her background, her lineage, I mean, what was her relationship to Jesus, and what was the rest of her life like after the crucifixion. That's one genre of book. The other primary genre that's out there are historical fiction books, where there's stories that involve Mary Magdalene, oftentimes by authors who have done tremendous research, and there's a lot of historical information woven in with the story. And I actually think that some of those books are very likely in part what I would call channeled. But the authors don't necessarily say that, but that's just my view. But those are the two primary types of books that are out there. What's different about this book is that Mary Magdalene, first of all, was right off the bat in the very first message, she was saying this is a unique time in the history on Earth, and it is a time of the divine feminine coming in, and that she is the representative of the divine feminine, not the only one necessarily, but one of the primary ones at this time who is leading us into the new age, which is all about the feminine coming to the fore and coming into union with the masculine. And we're talking divine feminine, divine masculine here. Because the new age is going to be an age of union and unity between the divine feminine and masculine. And she said that she and Yeshua were incarnating the scroll on earth 2 years ago as the embodiment of the divine feminine and the divine masculine in union, but that we weren't ready at that time. Specifically, we weren't ready to receive the divine feminine. And that is absolutely mirrored in the history of what happened and the church's, you know, story and what they told about Mary Magdalene and largely how she was written out of the story. But she said that she and Yeshua both knew that it would be 2,000 years before we were ready to start to receive the divine feminine, to know who she was, to receive her gifts, and to start to incarnate that within ourselves, both men and women, and that this is essential for our spiritual growth, and that this is the time right now where we are finally ready. And that, I believe, is why Mary Magdalene is becoming so prominent and people are coming to know her so much. And going back to your question about what's different about this book, it's that she is really stepping forth in her role as teacher and leader and showing us what we need to do so that we can embody these gifts of the divine feminine. And so it's very similar in many ways to what we have in the Bible and other accounts of what Jesus was doing and the other beings around him at that time. They were helping people to know God and to grow spiritually in their ability to be in union with God. It's exactly what she's focusing on in this book. But the difference is in terms of the divine feminine. And a lot of people today are talking about the divine feminine. I think there's a lot of awareness that this is the time of the divine feminine.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, what's different is that in this book, she's giving the real brass tacks instruction about, okay, how do we do that? How do we actually incarnate the divine feminine? And she's showing us in very practical ways how to do that.
That's amazing. Do you think that non-Christians will be able to relate to this book? Because obviously, you know, again, it's a pretty Christian philosophy, the whole idea of her. Do you think that they can relate?
Well, the funny thing is, when I first started telling people about this book and that I was telling Mary Magdalene, a small percentage of people gave me the response, oh, well, I'm not a Christian. And I was so surprised when they said that, because I didn't associate Mary Magdalene with Christianity at all. And I'm sure that has to do with my background of not being a Christian,
right.
But also
sure.
It has to do with the material she's bringing forth. This is not Christian material. This is universal material. This is for anyone who wants to be closer to God. And in fact, Christianity came long after both Mary Magdalene and Jesus' time, and it was the path that incorporated their teaching into that particular tradition. But their teaching wasn't limited to Christianity at the time that they lived and were giving their teaching, and neither is hers. And in some ways, I think it might be easier for non-Christians to be open to this. It will really take an open-mindedness, I think, on the part of Christians, someone who has a Christian background, to be open to this, because it does challenge some of the beliefs that were later adapted into the Christian church. Even the fact that she's saying she was a priestess of Isis in the temple of Isis, which was out of Egypt, I think that could be challenging to people. Certainly the fact that she was in a sacred relationship with Jesus and they were practicing sacred sexuality together. This does not conflict with anything that he says in the Bible, but it does conflict with the beliefs that were put out later when Christianity was founded and developed.
What is, we keep talking about the divine feminine. What is the divine feminine?
Well, I love that question. Thank you so much for answering that. And Mary Magdalene loves that question, too.
Well, good.
And what she says is that we all have the divine feminine within, just as we all have the divine masculine. It's different from our gender. Everyone, men and women, have both. And that the seat of the divine feminine is in three arenas within ourselves, our beings as human beings. That it's within our physical bodies, our sexuality, and our emotions, that these are the three areas that are the specifically feminine foundations within each one of us. And when all three of those are strong and mature, then the divine feminine can take her seat in our heart. And the divine feminine is ultimately the power of love. And the divine masculine is the power of consciousness. And the divine masculine is ultimately seated in our higher mind in the third eye. But that doesn't tend to awaken. There's a whole chain of events she talks about that happens for this full awakening. And it starts with the divine feminine, that first we need these three foundational areas to be strong, our relationship to our bodies, our sexuality, and our emotions. When those are strong, then we move into our heart and can stably incarnate love and ultimately unconditional love. When that happens, our lower mind, our thinking mind, relaxes, and it becomes in service to our heart. And at the same time that relaxes, that supports the opening of our higher mind, which is both the portal to other realms and dimensions, our psychic abilities, but it's also our openness to pure consciousness. And that's just the divine masculine in its highest, purest form, is this pure consciousness. So she says, ultimately, we are growing into this inner union of the feminine and masculine, which is the union of love and consciousness. And that's what will guide us into the new age. But what she's focusing on in the book is these three foundational areas, because she says, in terms of practical, that's what most of us need help with. And she said, most of us are underway with our relationship with our bodies. We have a pretty good understanding of what we need to do and are in process with that. She said the one area that isn't being looked at that might need more attention is the area of having shame relative to our bodies, not loving our bodies, totally accepting them and being completely comfortable in them. So that's the area of the body. And she didn't talk too much about that because she felt like there's already so much information available to people that she didn't need to reinvent the wheel. The second area relative to sexuality, she talked about sacred sexuality, and she introduced the sacred sexuality practices well, not practices, but orientation that she was schooled in and talked about that if people are going to engage sexuality, that she highly recommends that people become trained in sacred sexuality and this becomes a part of their spiritual path. But I knew all along that she wasn't going to say very much about that. And the reason was she didn't want to distract people from what she thought the primary communication was, what she thought was most important for people to hear, and that was the third area, which was about emotions, and specifically about the pain. And this is what she talks about more than anything else in the book, is that pain was given to us to help us move into union with God. But that most people never learn that pathway. And instead, what most of us have learned, especially in the West, is to try to avoid pain. Or if we do experience pain, to try to get out of it if we can. Now, she's not recommending martyrdom. She's not recommending that people try to be in pain. But she's saying when you are in pain, there is a gift for you in it, and there's a very specific pathway to receive that gift, and that is what she is talking about more than anything else in this book, because she states that she thinks if people could learn this pathway of a different way of relating to pain, it would do more to help them in their spiritual growth, and their opening into this new age that we are moving into, than anything else. So that was the primary area she talked about.
Is she talking about emotional pain, physical pain? What kind of pain?
Primarily emotional pain, but it can be applied to physical pain too. But it's very specific to emotional pain, and that's what she's really talking about.
So her most important message. I mean, what was her most crucial thing that she wanted you to get out to people, that she wanted you to relate to people, especially through your book?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, she wanted to give the overview of what's happening, that we're moving into this new age, that it's about the divine feminine. But she specifically wanted to give this teaching relative to how to relate to emotions differently. And she weaves that through the whole book and gives so many different examples and explanations, because that was the number one communication. And what I knew all along was that she had a second book, and that's the one I'm working on now. And in that one, she was going further into this explanation and instruction about sacred sexuality. But besides the fact that she felt like the emotional arena was the primary one of importance for most people, the second reason she was holding back on that information until the second book was because the emotional information that she's giving this gives people the foundation and the skills that prepares them for being ready to practice sacred sexuality. And so there was also a progression that she was doing that began with this emotional work, and that would prepare people for the sacred sexuality instruction.
You mentioned in the book that Mary talking a lot about higher dimensions. What does she mean by higher dimensions?
Right. Well, what she explains in the book, and I developed this even more in my commentary, is the idea that we as human beings are on a huge course that's spanning an immense period of time, bigger than I know I can even kind of imagine. I can just, it's a simple way for me to grasp it, is it's huge. Bigger than I can hold with my mind. And what it involves is that we started out as God beings, as undifferentiated from Source. And we made the choice to come into manifestation and to experience what is possible at these in manifestation that's different from being just pure, undifferentiated Source. And so we, out of our free will, started to come into manifestation, and we did it in stages, by steps, or gradations. And these stages or gradations are what you can call dimensions. And in my explanation, I divide it into 12 dimensions. I think this is somewhat arbitrary. Some people describe many different, you know, maps or different ways of looking at it that have different number of dimensions, and I don't think that's ultimately what matters. But the way that I look at it, I see it as 12 dimensions. And the very first, the highest level, the 12th dimension, was the original step into manifestation, which was coming into Mother, Father, God, these two aspects. And it actually was a trinity, Mother, Father, God, and I Am Presence, which is to me like the divine child, our I Am Presence. And so that was the very, very first step. Like you might think of it as like a cell division that happened into Mother, Father, God, and from there was birth, our the divine child, I Am Presence. And then there were increasingly steps down that were made coming into more and more concrete levels of manifestation until we reached all the way down into third dimension. And what I have been told is that this is as low as we're supposed to go. As a matter of fact, we've kind of gone what you might call lower than was originally intended, because things happened when we got into the third dimension that weren't anticipated. And right now we're at this place of like turning this whole thing around, where we're starting the other process, which I call ascension, where we're in a process of returning back into total unity with divine. And it's happening, again, dimension by dimension. So we are in the process now, I believe, and what Mary was referencing in the book, of shifting into our next higher level, which is actually a higher dimension. And it's what I call the fourth dimension, what she refers to it in the book as the fourth dimension. And this dimension is very much like what we experience in our dreams. We still have a physical body, but it's much more, it's much lighter. It's lighter in terms of we're more made of light and less physicality. And it's much more of a mind-based and emotionally-based dimension, where we have a thought and we can instantly manifest whatever that is, similar to our dreams, where in your dream you can think something and boom, you're in it. That's the way the fourth dimension functions. And it's also a very emotional dimension, the way that dreams can vary from something very heavy and dark seeming, that we call a nightmare, where there's lots of fear or lots of anger, or they can be ecstatic, blissful, where you're just so filled with joy and ecstasy. And that also, I think, is a characteristic of the fourth dimension. It's very emotionally based. And it's another reason why I think Mary's focusing so much on us gaining emotional mastery, so that we will be able to navigate the fourth dimension and have choice about where we end up manifesting there, manifesting where we want, which would, for most all beings, be in the higher frequencies, which are the more blissful, joyful emotions. So that's an example of a higher dimension, and it continues beyond there all the way through these 12 stages up to total reunification with Source. So that's part of the picture that she's presenting in this book, is that we are on a path, and it's huge, but we're in the process of making a very significant step into a new dimension right now.
I think that we've been able to tell. I mean, most of us, whether we're in the spiritual business or not, we've been able to sense that there's a lot of things changing. That there are a lot of things going on right now that are shifting, and that consciousness is changing, and that people are. I know in my practice, people are coming to me saying, "Whoa, something is going on. I just feel like I need guidance. I need help." It's not with issues in their life; it's with their overall life. You know, like that they're they have a different purpose or a different direction. They're just not sure, you know, exactly what it is. And I think that this is part of it. I think that the whole Mary Magdalene part is part of it. I've always thought of Mary Magdalene as I never bought into the prostitute thing. I never bought into a lot of the different things. I've always thought of just resonated with me that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. I just kind of believed that, you know, from the beginning. Did she ever mention that specific, did she ever get that specific? I mean, I know you said that she said that they were, you know, spiritual, what it was spiritual, you know, connected spiritually, but did she ever talk about the actual ceremony of marriage being part of what they went through?
She never did to me. She referenced them as holy husband and holy wife, which to
okay.
me was open-ended, how you might interpret that. I have heard right. other people say that they believe that the marriage in Cana in the wedding was their marriage, and that there are pointers to that, like the role that Mother Mary took was a role that only a mother of a bride, of a groom would take, and those kinds of things. But in her messages to me, she did not ever, say that.
I because it probably doesn't really matter, you know.
It doesn't
matter
to her. It's real obvious
yeah.
to me.
right. Yeah,
so many of our questions that we have are things that are that seem important to us, but it's clear to me from my interactions with higher beings, they don't put importance on it. Things like whether you know they were married or not is an example, and that. At least in the messages I receive, they prefer not to focus on those things. They prefer to focus on things that they feel are important. And the ones that they're coming to me about and wanting me to communicate are mostly about us. They want to help us with our growth and would rather we were focusing on ourselves and what we can do. Because ultimately, their ultimate message is we're intended to become just like them. We don't need to find out about them. We need to find out about how we can be just like them, except that we all have our unique gifts. We all have our unique purpose and work that we're meant to do. So we won't be identical to them in that sense, but we will be like them in terms of we will be at that level of spiritual development and that level of higher living in a higher dimension and representing higher consciousness.
Right. Well, we're coming to the last few minutes of the show, so I want to give you an opportunity to, first of all, how can people get a copy of Mary Magdalene Beckens? Where can they find your books?
Okay. There's a website for the book, which is marymagdalenebeckens.com. Let me spell that for people. It's MaryMagdalene, and then Beckens is BeckOns.com. So there's lots more information about the book there, and you can order the book through the website. You can also get it through Amazon in the U.S. and in Europe in both paperback and Kindle. You can get it through BarnesandNoble.com in paperback and Nook. It's available on iTunes in ebook form, and you can also get it through bookstores, and if your bookstore doesn't have it, you can ask them to order it. So it's available in all those ways. And then I also have another website, which is MercedesKerkel.com, and that's MercedesKerkel.com. And that tells about the work that I do and all of my services. There's lots of videos and recordings of me channeling there. And it also has a link to the other website for the book, so you can get to that, the MaryMagdalenebeckens.com website through my website.
And what,
so
what
those
services,
are all ways.
What services do you offer? What other services do you offer, by the way?
Okay, I do private sessions. I do what I call evolved life coaching, where I bring all the information that I have gathered from all these beings, as well as my background in spiritual growth and in counseling, and I help people with whatever issues they're dealing with in their life to grow beyond them. I also do channeled private sessions with people, which I call guidance from beings to light. And in these, I can help people to connect with their angels, with their higher self, with their guides, with particular archetypes they may want to connect with, such as Mary Magdalene or Yeshua. So that's another session that I offer. And then I offer private sessions for specifically focused on learning spiritual skills and helping people with their spiritual growth.
That's great. And you also do the Akashic Records, right?
I do Akashic Record readings, but, you know, I'm actually starting to phase out of that because I have found that for me, because I know that there are other people who do those and people can get that information from other sources, but for me, I have found that the sessions from the beings of light tend to be more helpful to people. And
okay.
I have had some amazing sessions in the Akashic Records. Absolutely life-changing for people. But I just started to feel like it was more of my work to do the channeling the higher beings. And so that's what I'm moving into doing more of now.
Okay, great. So if somebody wants to book a private session with you, they can reach you through www.mercedeskarkle.com?
That's right.
Okay, great. And also, I'm sure, through email, which I think your email is info@mercedeskarkle.com. Is that right?
That's right. And then the other thing is I have a newsletter that I send out once a week that you can sign up through either of the websites. And it's called Into the Heart Newsletter. And every week I share a channeled message in that newsletter. So if you're interested in hearing more of these channeled messages, that's another forum for hearing my messages.
And people can sign up for that through your website?
That's right.
Okay, great. All right, that sounds fantastic. I really appreciate your being on the show. This is something that has been, like interesting to me since I first heard about you and your book. And I'm really glad that you were able to make it on the show. And I'm really looking forward to your second book. And when you get that second book finally, you know, when you get it out, I know it's a pain in the butt to get it out, but when it finally when you finally finish it and it gets published, let me know so we can have you back on and talk some more about that book and the new messages that you're getting from Mary Magdalene.
That sounds great. I'm really looking forward to sharing this with people, and I think a lot of people are going to find this book fascinating, so I can't wait. But thank you so much for having me on the show, Lisa. This has been
really
wonderful.
Thank you for being on. It was a lot of fun. It was really, really informative, and I appreciate your taking the time to be on.
Oh, well, thanks.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, and I will talk to you. I'll be in touch soon.
Okay, sounds great.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was Mercedes Kirkle, and Mercedes wrote the book, Mary Magdalene Beckons, Join the River of Love. Definitely, everybody get a copy of that book. Visit her website at www.mercedeskarkle.com. Schedule a session with her. It sounds like she can do some fascinating stuff. I'm actually thinking about scheduling a session with her, too. But, you know, I love doing that stuff. I don't think that you can possibly get enough information. There's so much out there, and there's so many people that receive this information in different ways. And, you know, no matter how many people you have talked to, somebody new always has different insight because of their specific abilities. Everyone's abilities are so different. Whether you've had a reading with me or you've had a reading with any of my other guests, you know, having a reading with Mercedes it'll be an all new thing. You're not going to get, you may have the same general theme, you know, running through the reading, but you'll get different specifics. And I think that's really important to remember, that, you know, this is not something that you do one and you never have to do it again, or you never want to do it again, or, you know, you're wasting money, because you're not. You're really learning much, much more. So anyway, this was a great show. I really enjoyed today's show. Both our guests, Lori Champion from PinellasPascoParanormal.com, that was really interesting with the EVPs. I really enjoyed that. And then, of course, Mercedes with her channeling of Mary Magdalene, which is beautiful. I really, really enjoyed that as well. So next week we'll have another great show, of course. You've been listening to Just Believe Radio. Just Believe Radio is on every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And we will have more guests on next week covering different spiritual topics. Don't forget to check out my webpage at www.lisatarvis.com. you'll find links to my Facebook page, my Twitter account, my LinkedIn account, and links to where you can find my book called Just Believe. And all the archives, by the way, from our previous Just Believe radio shows are also there, as well as on Blog Talk. So until next week, everyone, have a happy, safe week, and make sure you find some joy, and be happy. And thanks for listening. Talk to you all next week.